Welcome to Total Convexity, a weekly financial podcast that caters to professional finance individuals, high net worth investors, family offices, and other sophisticated financial professionals. Join our hosts, hedge fund manager Jim Wang and Henrik Niehaus, as they explore the interconnected world of global macroeconomics, central banks, and capital markets. Comprehending the intricate web of global macroeconomics, central bank policies, and capital markets isn't just an option, it's a necessity. Whether you're a chief investment officer, financial analyst, entrepreneur, or simply someone curious about how the global economy and capital markets function, this podcast serves as your compass through the intricacies of the global financial landscape. In each episode, we will delve deep into the influential factors shaping our world, from global economic trends and central bank policies to capital markets and trading strategies. We will demystify financial jargon, clarify complex numerical data, and provide you with insights from experts in the field.
Total Convexity, episode 12, is being recorded on April the 26th, 2024. I'm your host, Henrik Niehaus, and joining me is my co-host, Jim Wang. I'm glad to return with this 12th installment of our podcast series. Jim, you have talked about your secular thesis for the decoupling of the supply chains of the United States and China, and the longer-term implications for onshoring, reshoring, and nearshoring. You have mentioned that one of the key beneficiaries of this process is Mexico. So perhaps you could spend some time to have a discussion about Mexico today. What do you think?
Hello, everyone. I'm glad to return to this new episode. Yes, Henrik, I think that's a great idea. And if I were to ask you, you know, what's the best performing asset class in the past two and a half years? 2022, 2023 until today. You may think about maybe NASDAQ and Japanese stock market or Indian. But in the end, actually the best performer is Mexico. And so here I have a chart here. This is a total return of Mexico peso versus the S&P 500. So the white line is the total return index. If you are long Mexico peso, you get both the spot, appreciation of the spot Mexico peso and also the carry. And as you can see, your return is more than 50%. And the blue line is the total return of S&P 500. And if you are long Mexico peso and the short Japanese yen, you will get, the performance even much better. You're almost more than double your capital. And the blue line here is the S&P 500. And the white line is basically the total return index of being long Mexico and the short Japanese yen. And this is because you have more than 10% of the carry of Mexico peso plus the spot, appreciation of Mexico peso. And if you just look at the Mexican equities, they are all performing the U.S. Stocks as well. So in this chart, I have two lines. One is the white line and the other is the orange line. And the white line is the relative total return ratio of Mexican ETF, EWW, versus SPY. And the orange line is the Chinese ETF, FXI, versus SPY. And now you can see, since 2020, stock market has been outperforming the U.S. and the Chinese has significantly underperform the U.S. market. So I think one of the key driver of this, as we have talked about this in the past, is that it's the secular trend of the decoupling of the U.S. supply chain and the Chinese supply chain. And we talk about what are their investment opportunities. Basically, we separate in two groups. One group of ideas are the the industries or the countries who are going to get hurt by that, and the other group is the industries and the countries, and that they are going to benefit from it. And one of the major beneficiary is basically Mexico. So do should we delve deep in into the details of this topic?
Yes, that would be very informative. Now, before we do that, though, my take on this is that while the re-nearshoring of parts of the U.S. supply chain is an important factor when discussing the macro picture of Mexico, it is important to note that a discussion of the U.S. supply chain itself is a different, although related, topic from discussing how Mexico will benefit from parts of the supply chain being reshored to Mexico. Clearly, the risk profile of the parts of the U.S. supply chain that will be reshored or nearshored to Mexico will change. But how this risk profile will change in terms of diminishing U.S. companies, et cetera, and how new risks arise when U.S. imports come from Mexico is a separate topic, actually. Do you agree?
Yeah, I completely agree. So I think we're just focusing on how Mexico is going to benefit from this secular trend, which I think, the decoupling of the U.S. supply chain from China is a long-term trend. There is up and downs, but I think this is going to be a secular trend. So we're focusing how Mexico is going to benefit from it, rather than, how the how this kind of the major topic of U.S. supply chain. Versus, integration of Chinese supply chain into the U.S. supply chain, how that's going to change over time and the risk involved with that. But I think the key point I want to mention here is that the Mexico being the south of the border, right, and the Canada being the northern of the border of the U.S., they have always been the major kind of trading partners of the United States. Because of the NAFTA agreement, and naturally, it's conducive for the free trade of the goods and services, in addition to the proximity, geographic, proximity, not to mention the lower labor cost and et cetera in Mexico, right? So I'm showing this chart here. It's basically the import by countries, right, to the U.S., and the red line is the percentage import from China, right? And the other, slight gray line here, this one here, this is Mexico, kind of a proportion of the import into the US. And in 2001, right, when China joined WTO, China was ex you know was US was importing less than 10% from China, and more from Mexico. I remember very clearly during that time, when China was about to join WTO, the biggest opponent to that is actually Mexico. And for the right reasons, right? So in the past, in the last more than 2 decades, you can see the red line have steadily gone higher. So Chinese import, it has gone from less than 10% into about 20%, right, at the peak into 17. At the same time, the Mexico kind of the import has been more kind of stagnating, right? Until when Trump came to power, and imposed, and started the tariff war against the Chinese import, and you can see Chinese import has steadily declined. And then the Mexico, the imports from Mexico has steadily increased. And the line just crossed very recently. So now Mexico is the biggest trading partner of the United States. China is becoming the second one. And I think in the next, probably the Canada will be the second one pretty soon. And the China will be the third one, probably in the next few quarters and in the near future. So I think the trend is very clear. US is importing less from China, more from the other regions. The one that have increased the market share, right, in the US market is Mexico. So and then we can see also here from I think it's naturally and kind of easy to digest, right? Relative to the China to the geopolitical risk in China, right? Mexico has much less geopolitical risk. It's very close to the US, right? Instead of all this ocean, take a long time for the ocean freight, right? You can just basically get the goods from, excuse me, from the Mexico through highways and the railroad, etc. And the other chart I want to show here is the foreign direct investment in China versus Mexico. So the blue line is the foreign direct investment, and the orange line is the foreign direct investment in Mexico. And you can see in the past, since pandemic, the foreign direct investment to Mexico has increased dramatically. And in the past 2 years, 2 to 3 years, the foreign direct investment in China has declined dramatically. And the most recently, it has become negative. So China has always been the top destination for the foreign direct investment. And now it's having negative foreign direct investment. And I would say, this is a huge reversal of the trend. So I think undoubtedly the Mexican has benefit from this major trend. And I also want to point it out here is that we always associated with the emerging market with the boom and the bust of the inflation cycle. As we have talked about it in the past, that when the US dollar become very strong and some emerging countries will start to blow up, and when the US dollar become start to decline and liquidity become very ease, and there is a booming part of the Latin America. And I think this time around things has been quite different from the past, in a sense that a lot of emerging market countries have a very positive kind of reaction function to inflation. And take example of Mexico, and I would say the other countries as well, like Brazil, they have started tightening monetary policies in 9 months ahead of the Fed. So Mexico have tightened the monetary policy, started hiking interest rate in June 2021. And the Fed started in March 2024, they have hiked aggressively, right? And now the inflation is under control, and they actually have started to cut interest rate. So if you think about it, we have a pretty large movement of the U.S. dollars, right? As the Fed tightened the monetary policy in the past few years, and despite of that, Mexican peso has been one of the performing currencies. And historically that doesn't happen. Historically, emerging market currencies would significantly decline. And this obviously have a lot to do with as I mentioned, the reaction function of the central bank to the inflation. So nowadays Mexico have CPI about 4.4%, and their policy rate is 11%. Versus here in the United States, we have 3.5% of inflation, and our Fed fund rate is between 5.5 to 5.25 and 5.5, right? So I have a chart here. The red line is basically Mexican, 1 year real yield, minus the U.S. 1 year real yield, right? The green line is the Mexican real yield, 1 year real yield. And the gray dotted line is the US real yield. As you can see, this is a very significant, and I would say probably, among the highest range in the past few decades. So that's also have a fundamental support for the Mexican, kind of peso. So I pause here, and I think you have some insights into the specifics of the nearshoring parts of the supply chain to Mexico. So which part of the supply chain would be affected, and how long this alignment will take?
Well, that's a big question, and I'll give you mostly generalities as an answer. So in terms of manufacturing processes that Chinese companies might set up in Mexico, there really is a case to be made that newer and highly value-added manufacturing, such as fully automated plants for electrical vehicles and high-end electronics, will remain in China because of the specialized ecosystems that these industries require. And the fact that you really shouldn't want to export your cutting-edge know-how. But of course, there is still plenty of less cutting-edge manufacturing to be relocated purely based on straight financial considerations, right? We also have to bear in mind that even though foreign direct investments into Mexico are strong, this is not a new phenomenon. Mexican manufacturing aimed in large parts at the US market has been growing mostly for cost reasons for a number of decades. The powerhouse here is the state of Chihuahua, just across the border from Texas and New Mexico, which is a well-established industrial center for electronics, medical equipment, car parts, what have you. So we should expect to see more, a lot more of the same type of industries that we already have in Chihuahua, and presumably also some new industries that will benefit from the industrial ecosystem which already is in place. So when we talk about the reshoring to Mexico, it's not about someone having come up with a bright idea to build something in the desert. It's about adding to a very well-established industrial base already, and you build on that. This will be an ongoing and dynamic process, and we'll see the impact of this reshoring for a long time. Now, the risk profile of the parts of the US supply chain that will be nearshore to Mexico will obviously change. But this does not mean that the US is cutting out all Chinese companies from its supply chain, will it? All kinds of companies will be setting up shop in Mexico, including Chinese manufacturing companies. Isn't that right, Jim?
Yes, I agree. And basically, when people talking about the offshoring, nearshoring things, people thought about maybe, it's not like a, kind of a do a switch of the light. It take a long time. So for China to be really the manufacturing base of the world, you really need a lot of things come together to build up the whole ecosystem, right? So you need the infrastructures, you need different supplies of different, component of the manufacturer, for the manufacturing facilities, and obviously the labors and the know-hows and et cetera. And that whole ecosystem take decades to build out, and it's not, it's very difficult to replicate in the other part of the world. So from that sense, I would say, for the U.S. to decouple from the Chinese supply chain, although this is a major trend, it's going to be a slow process. It will take a long time. However, I think this is a major trend. It's difficult to reverse. In terms of setting up, kind of a manufacturing facilities and et cetera in the other part of the world, there's always the challenges in different regions, and we can talk about that in the other part of the world, when we get there, for example, India and et cetera. But here in the Mexico, it will be the similar thing. And like you mentioned, the Chinese companies, they are also setting up the manufacturing plant here in Mexico, but they are not moving the most cutting edge, factory over there. The high end will the high-end technology, will remain there. What they're going to move there is more kind of a labor, more labor-intensive things, and basically just markups, so that it can be labeled as manufactured in Mexico, right? So they can be exported into the U.S. So you're right. The Chinese companies are also setting up the manufacturing, facilities in Mexico just to for the things to be assembled there. I'm showing this chart here. This shows the export to Mexico from China and also from the U.S., right? So the orange line is the Mexico exports to the U.S., and the blue line is the Chinese exports in Mexico. As you can see, they move in tandem, right? When the Mexico exports more to the U.S., China exports more into Mexico, and I think it's known that China basically just circumvent this by setting up by changing the label from manufacturing in China to manufacturing in Mexico. Nonetheless, I think this will just benefit because you will have a capital move into Mexico, and you need the product and the services, right, to do all this, and that is all beneficiary. That is all that will all benefit Mexico economy. Putting that, kind of, I think the long-term economic implication is very clear. And Henrik, you are very interested in geopolitics, so maybe you can give some us insight on that. Do you see any systemic risk in Mexico from geopolitical point of view?
Well, every country is different in its own way. And Mexico is a large country with considerable regional differences. And just because we read about some mostly rural parts of Mexico resembling a failed state, in the sense that the civil authorities don't seem to be in control of their own territory, or that you see pictures of narco-driven shootouts in resorts like Acapulco and Cancun, does not mean that the well-functioning parts of Mexico, such as the state of Chihuahua, will be affected. So no, I'm not concerned about any systemic risks threatening this direct foreign investment boom in Mexico. No. Now, actually, so let's go back to something that you said here. I mean, it really looks like the Mexican peso has had one hell of a run recently, and as you said, Mexican stocks have outperformed in the past few years. So the question is, where do we go from here?
So I think we have to look at it from different time horizons, right? I think from the long-term fundamental perspective, what we look at here is the long-term trend. And we think the long-term trend is going to continue. There could be up and downs and et cetera, right? But I think this long-term trend probably is the secular trend. And I think the long-term thesis will remain. And secondly, I think it's more, whether asset price has reflected that or not, whether the asset price is still attractive or not, right? And I would say, look at the valuations of the equities, and I also pointed out the real interest rate in Mexico. Actually, I think they have the highest real interest rate in the world. I mean, it's even higher than Brazil. So I think the currency is attractive. The assets are attractive from valuation perspective. So I think from fundamental perspectives, they are continue to be very supportive. However, one have to recognize this is a Mexico asset. It's emerging market countries, and it's a risk asset, and it will be correlated to risk asset. So if there is a recession here in the U.S. and the demand from the U.S. will significantly fall, the import from Mexico will fall, and therefore will negatively impact the Mexico kind of economy. And by the way, we think the recession risk in the U.S. is actually very high. So I think it will be impacted by the demand here in the U.S. And I think the currency is also a very important consideration. You know, as I talk about the Mexican and yen has been the best performing, you know, kind of pairs and as a class. And if Japan have a big change of the monetary policy and Japanese yen starts to strengthen and the carry trade starts to unwind, and I think because of how crowded this trade has been, and I think the Mexico peso can actually have a setback. So I think those are the risks here. And another one risk I'm talking about is more kind of U.S. monetary policy and the U.S. dollars, right? So I think in our third episode, we talk about the U.S. dollar, how important that has been for the emerging market countries. We talk about the first wave of, the major downtrend of U.S. dollar, resulted in the Latin American miracle, right? In Brazil, and then once the U.S. dollar start to strengthen, and you have lost decades in Latin America, right? In the second wave of the U.S. dollar, kind of down cycle, you have rising, tiger, Asian, countries, right? And when the U.S. dollar start to rising, and then they all, then we have Asian financial crisis, right? So at this particular point of time, as we talk about the U.S. dollars, we have discussed, kind of where we are in terms of the U.S. dollar cycle. And typically the U.S. dollar will start to weaken once Fed, once the, once the market participant anticipate that the Fed would stop rate hike. And then we will have a last rally during the risk off scenario and before recession, right? So I think if that happens, the Mexico, SM and Mexico peso probably will suffer. But then after that, then we will have a Fed come back and ease the monetary policy again and start another cycle. So I think, after that, I think the US dollar will start to weaken significantly and start probably a long term kind of decline for quite some period of time. And I think during that time, the best performing asset will probably be in some of the some of emerging market countries. And my suspicion is going to it could be Mexico. So that could be a very long term kind of a trend. So I have talked about kind of different time horizons and the different drivers, right? And I think, how you want to take advantage of this information really depending on your time horizon, what kind of investors you are. Does that make sense to you, Henrik?
Yes, it does. Well, thank you very much for straightening this out. And I think we've come to the end of episode 12 of Total Convexity. Listeners can follow us by searching for Total Convexity in their favorite podcast apps or on YouTube. Please don't forget to click on the subscription button so that you will be automatically notified when a new episode is available. You can also follow us on X, where we have the handle at Total Convexity. And you can email us at totalconvexity@gmail.com. And finally, you can follow our insights on Substack at totalconvexity.substack.com. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. If you like this podcast, we would appreciate if you can pass along to anyone who may be interested. And this concludes episode 12 of our podcast, Total Convexity. See you next time.
Disclaimer: the information provided in this podcast is for general informational purposes only and should not be considered as financial advice. Consult with a qualified financial professional before making any financial decisions. All investments involve risks. There are no guarantees of profits, and investments may incur losses. The contents discussed in this podcast is not a recommendation for any specific investment. Past performance does not predict future results. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are their own and may not necessarily reflect the views of the hosts or affiliated parties. The podcast host and guests may have financial interests in companies or products discussed, and listeners should be aware that the opinions expressed by guests and their hosts may reflect biases. We strive for accuracy, but financial information can change rapidly. The content may not always be up to date or complete, so verify information independently. This podcast does not offer legal or regulatory advice, and listeners are responsible for ensuring that their financial decisions comply with applicable laws and regulations. Mentions of specific financial products or services do not constitute endorsements. Perform your due diligence before engaging with any financial offering. Listeners are fully responsible for their financial decisions, and the podcast's guests, hosts, and affiliated entities are not liable for any financial losses resulting from actions taken based on the provided contents.